Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Born in Benin, West Africa, Angelique Kidjo is a Grammy Award-winning recording artist deemed Africa's premier diva by Time magazine. The BBC has included Angelique Kidjo in its list of the African continent's 50 most iconic figures. The Guardian has listed her as one of the top 100 most inspiring women in the world. And Kidjo is the first woman to be listed among the 40 most powerful celebrities in Africa by Forbes magazine. Known for her dynamic and uplifting music, she has translated her distinctive work in the arts to that of philanthropy by promoting education for girls in Africa through her foundation, Batonga, and as a UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador. Angelique Kidjo will perform at the Mahewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts this Saturday, February 23rd at 8 p.m., and she joins us now. Angelique Kidjo, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
When did you know that you wanted to be a musician and that you would be a performer for your whole life?
That is a long story. I always loved singing, and I was hesitating between being a human rights lawyer or a singer. And I've did some researches, and I find out that in order to be a human rights lawyer, I will have to be involved in politics somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That sometime justice won't be the matter, but politics. And I said to myself, do you want to live with your conscience always bugging you because you put somebody innocent in jail for political reason, or do you just want to sing and be happy with what you do and empower people for music? So music took over for versus law.
Through music and through your reach with music, you have been able to affect change in the world because you are an activist as well.
Yeah, I mean, music... What music does, basically, that it is really magical and really humbling, is that it's a universal language. We say that and it sounds corny and it's repeated, but in fact, it's really true. Because when I'm in front of audience that doesn't speak my language at all, which is the case most of the time, apart from Benin, not many people in the world speak my language.
Mm-hmm.
But when the music that I do bring people to tears, bring people to tell me your music have allowed me to overcome this hardship or overcome my disease, for me, there's no the better statement, a stronger statement than that. Because that's just the way music is. Music has empowered me during my teenage years to really be who I wanted to be and not to be in trouble because I had music. Music has had my back, as if you're willing to put it like that.
And speaking of a universal language of music, you listened to American music before you spoke English and learned and responded to the melodies without knowing what the words meant.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Then thinking back to it sometime, it is like... even though I speak English now,
right,
sometimes the song would start playing and my lyrics that I put on when I was a kid would come first, which means nothing, basically. And I'll catch myself back, what are you doing? It's not English, it's your gibberish language that you're singing. But it has been such a strong part of my life, music, the music of America, the music of Latin America, the music of Europe. My father makes sure that we have access to pretty much everything that exists out there, music-wise, for us to have a vision of the diversity and the richness of the world. And when you grow up with that, you take it for granted. You don't even see the perspective that your father has for the future. And my father was really a liberal person that really empowered us through education and brings music to emphasize that education. My father always used to say, when you listen to music and you love music, your brain absorbs better your classes.
So your family has always been supportive of your pursuit of a musical career.
Oh, yeah. So supportive that my father produced my first concert when I released my first album. I was 19, and the local promoter accepted at the beginning to promote the album by a concert in the country next door, Togo, 2 weeks prior. And then we did the posters, we started the campaigning, everything, and then 2 weeks to the show, he came to my father and said, you know what, I love your child, but she's too little, nobody's going to see her on stage, and I don't want to put my money and my name behind her.
Huh.
And my father said, do you hear yourself speak? You sound so stupid, I don't even want to answer that. And at that time, my father was already retired. And raising 10 kids, when we've won paycheck, it's not an easy task. But, you know, you have always have help in Africa. So my father said, okay, this is the deal. I will put my retirement money behind this. And if there's any money left, then we're going to deal with it. We're going to have a very hard month. And we all say, yeah, we got to make this statement strong enough for people to understand that when somebody's talented, the size has nothing to do with it, that you cannot give your word and withdraw so close to the event. So my father went ahead and produced the show. We have, though, to change the dates, change the name of the musician, because the musician were paid by the promoter,
mm-hmm.
find another band. So we kept the same poster with the handwriting of my father and myself going through packs of posters,
mm-hmm.
changing the ticket price, the date, and everything.
That was your first big concert, but it wasn't your first performance. Could you tell us about the first time you ever sang for an audience?
Oh, I was 6 years old.
Right. So young.
And as usual, I was always bugging everybody going around in the theater costume of my mom. And I knew all the acts, which one would come in after, and I would prepare them, but not really in the good size and good order. And my mom was always, why are you doing this? You give me headache. Get out of here. And I'll be always there. But I'm trying to help, and I know every part. And even if you make a mistake in a vowel, I'm going to go, that's not it. And my mom, shh, shush me down. And one day I was and I always asked my mom, why can't I be the little girl that played in your play? And my mom said, because it's not yours. Because when I was casting, you were not interested. So now you want to do it? And one day that girl was sick. Because I knew everything my mom came when I was shoveling through the costumes, grabbed the little girl's costume, put it over me. I'm like, you trying on me? She said, no, you're going on stage. I'm like, uh-uh, I'm not going on stage. She go, yeah, you going on stage. I'm like, uh-uh. By the time I was arguing, thinking that she was joking, she just pushed me in the spotlight. And I felt like deers or rabbit in front of a
headlights, right.
The light of a car.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I could hear all everything in my body going, K-k-k-k-k-k. I was like, I'm going to have a heart attack right now. And the whole place started laughing. So they thought it was part of the act. And because I was so blinded by the spotlight, I couldn't see anybody. So therefore, my fear just went away. And I'm like, I'm going to do like I do home. I'll do my little thing, put my hand on my hip, and do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I sang the first time. And then people cheer up. They stand up. They give me a standing ovation. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm liking this. And I get hooked. But it was fun at that time because I just let the fear go,
mm-hmm.
and just be. And since then, I have been addicted to stage.
When you moved away from Benin, you moved to Paris first, right?
Yep.
Why did you make that move?
Because my parents, the political time were very hard there. We were in a communist regime where freedom of speech and was taken away and everybody spied on everybody. And I couldn't do it because I knew my father had always told me that I should not write my music to support any political party. My voice should be the voice for the one that has no voice, to express my own opinion without being downsized by the fact that I am linked to a political party.
Mm-hmm.
When I decided to leave, the first choice was Paris because I have a brother that was student there. And my father felt, my mom and dad felt comfortable for me to go there because my father study as a student in Europe and have seen firsthand the freedom that you can have there and what the downside of it sometimes, drugs and all that kind of stuff. And I know they worry a lot for me. But my brother said, send her here, I will be here. And I wouldn't be alone. That was the worry of my parents. And I stayed with my brother for 3-4 years before I could rent a place for myself and get on with my life.
And you live in New York now, right?
Yep, since 1997. That's the best move I've ever made.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So you think you'll stay?
Oh, I'm staying. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, there's a lot of things we can criticize about America, but it's really the land of opportunity. And those opportunities can't die out because of political and partisanship. And we have to include everybody in. That's the power and the strength of America. Doesn't matter what language you speak. Doesn't matter what skin color you have. But still, there are racism. I'm not saying this is paradise.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you're given a chance to prove what you can do. And if you're a hard worker, you make it. And that's what I like about this place and the diversity of culture that is right here. You can go to a different club every night, listen to different type of blues, different type of music. For me as a musician, it's an exciting place to be.
You were called one of the 40 most powerful celebrities in Africa by Forbes magazine and Africa's premier diva by Time magazine, among other, you know, sort of titles bestowed upon you from the media over the years. When you get that kind of recognition, that kind of attention, does it impact your day-to-day life, or is it something you just hear and think is nice and then sort of carry on?
For me, is that my work is being recognized
mm-hmm.
in many different ways, in the different form that it has. And I like it. I mean, it's really empowering.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it comes with a responsibility to live up to that legacy. I'm still the same person. I'm not going to change because through my work, I've proven that Africa is not only about misery, it's not only about cliche, but it's about substance. So it's good that people recognize that. It's a good step toward more global respect to people, even though they live in different cultures, speak different languages. It's not because we don't speak the same languages or we don't have the same skin color that we have to be disrespected. So in that regard, it means a lot to me because I hope the young kids gonna realize in this era of technology that technology is one thing, but you got to get out of your comfort zone also to be able to achieve yourself and to see the world in its globality more than the world in your surrounding.
Angelique Kidjo, it will be fantastic to have you in the Berkshires, and thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks for having me with you.
Angelique Kidjo will perform at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts this Saturday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. For ticket information, visit mehewi.org. That's mehaiwe.org. Or call their box office, 413-528-0100. The number one more time, 413-528-0100. Angelique Kidjo's website is kidjo.com, K-I-D-J-O.com. And the songs featured in this segment are from her 2012 live concert album, Spirit Rising, which is available on the Razor and Tie label.
I had a feeling once that you and I could tell each other everything for tomorrow. But even with an oath, we've truth on our side. When you turn away from me, it's not right. I think you're a contract. I think you're a contract. You lie. Don't call me a
I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.